Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 54. And we are live tonight, as always, on both YouTube and on RadioAlbion.com. So if you haven't subscribed to my YouTube channel, make sure you do so. If it's your first time here, hello. And if you are not aware of Radio Albion, you should be. We broadcast live on Radio Albion. It's a site run by a good friend of mine, Sven Longshanks. He's the man who helps me arrange the conferences. RadioAlbion.com is an immense wealth of great nationalist material. So if you're ever at a loose end, if you're ever bored, if you ever need more nationalist content, a great place to get it is RadioAlbion.com. So if you are here on YouTube tonight, you might want to check that out after the show. I am also on DLive, but I haven't streamed there yet, and I'm still thinking of the kind of streams that I might like to do on that alternative site. Now, the guest tonight is a young man named Renew Britannia. Well, that's his channel name, but his name is Wesley, and we will be introducing him very, very shortly. Now, if you would like to contribute to the show, if you would like to ask questions, please do so using Entropy. Now, the Entropy link is in the show description. It is on Twitter, it is on Telegram, and it is in the live chat now. You can ask questions and you can make financial contributions. Now, all questions are voted upon and they are done like a meritocracy. So the best voted questions are the ones that are asked to myself, Wesley, and Jason later in the show. You can also make paid contributions. All paid contributions are asked to the audience or read out live. So Entropy is live. I am just dumping the link in the chat again now. So that's how you can interact with us. You can also make donations to myself via Bitcoin. The Bitcoin link is in the show description. So if you would like to make a cryptocurrency donation, that is the way to do it. And finally, if you want to donate in other ways, or if you would like to get involved, please send me an email at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. That is the best way to reach me. Also, you should be visiting the Patriotic Alternative website regularly. The Patriotic Alternative website is an excellent resource for not only facts, but also alternative news. It is updated daily with at least 2 news articles. So www.patrioticalternative.org.uk. And a quick reminder, I will be doing a stream with Dangerfield on Saturday discussing the Mad Max films, all 4 of them. So that should be good. However, on Sunday, I don't know what's happening with the stream, but I will not be debating Sargon. Sargon bottled it. So, yes. Just in the same way that those horrible, horrible people disrespected Harry the other weekend, Sargon has decided he can't debate me because we know why he can't debate me. There's no point going into that. Anyway, tonight we have a packed show, but we have a little bit of a different intro from Jason. Jason has, in fact, got something that he would like to show you. And if he wants to whiz the link over to me now in the private chat, I can show you all. Right, I'm going to set this up and then I'm going to do a quick screen share with you. Okay, here we go.
Friends and family, this coming Saturday, the 23rd at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we are going to have a very special TAP episode for you. On the after party, we are going to be celebrating the official launch of the standalone version of Prometheus Rising, Take Back Your Destiny. The Stelliferous Canopy features music by musical legends Eminent Rain. For null.
Navigation, our location, an obstacle ahead. Our journey is ending, the crew rises.
and Philosophicat, all three of whom will be appearing on the show. Ezra St. White, the talented artist responsible for the illustrations on the inside front of the book, will also make an appearance. We will be featuring a video by Philosophicat and the astounding Groundhog Fury, the creator of the book's cover and the back of the book inside illustration. We will, of course, have the wise discernment and perspicacity of Jared George and with the inspired spiritual insights of Laura Lee, we are going to probe the uncharted waters of the biospirit and the conjuring of our gods. There will be surprises, prizes, and more, but the great Mr. George and I don't want you merely watching the party. We want you partying. If you're going to be alone, get your beverages and condiments ready. But if you can get together with friends or family in person or virtually, make your plans now. And remember, if you receive your copy of Prometheus Rising, Take Back Your Destiny, before the party, make sure you DM me on Twitter or email me a picture of the book in your hand or in some interesting setting, and we will do our best to show every picture over the course of the show. You can also participate by posting your pictures and or your favorite quotes from the book to your social media platforms on and leading up to the 23rd. It is going to be a hell of a good time, and we look forward to seeing all of you.
Well, thank you for that. That takes No White Guilt's intro to a new level. That was very good, and I'm sure the show will be excellent. And congratulations on publishing yet another excellent book. So it is time to introduce our special guest this evening, a man known as Renew Britannia Wesley. He has an excellent YouTube channel. It is only small, but it is perfectly formed and his content is superb. And I suggest that if you haven't checked it out, you do so either now or straight after the show. Let's get this man the number of subs he deserves. He's still on less than 2,000 subs. Let's get him over 2,000 tonight. I think that's something that we can hopefully do. And he certainly deserves it. Wesley, along with a few other young people, actually, are a new breed of nationalists, a new breed of up-and-coming nationalists that all show immense promise. Because what we have to remember is this movement isn't just for the now, but it is also for the future. And although there are many wonderful, wonderful, talented people carrying the torches of our time and carrying the torches of our people at this time, those people eventually will get old. They will pass away and a new generation will take their place. And it fills my heart with joy to introduce Wesley tonight because he is one of those talented young people who will one day take the place of people like myself, people like Laura, and many other people who have helped shape this movement to this day. These people are immensely talented. Wesley is immensely talented. He has not been caught up in the nonsense that so many nationalist youths managed to embroil themselves in. He hasn't made the same mistakes that I did when I was his age, and his future should therefore be much, much brighter. So without further ado, here is Wesley. Please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you, about your channel. Tell us how we can contribute to your work. And yes, anything else that's on your mind as well.
Well, good evening, everybody. I'm Wesley Russell. I run the Renew Britannia YouTube channel. Literally just emerged on the scene. I got a shout out from Dangerfield himself a couple of months back, and so very thankful for him. But yeah, the main thing people know me for is doing my weekly live stream every Sunday at 7, where we cover current affairs, but I usually sort of give very long-winded rants and tangents where I'm just expressing my thoughts, and sometimes it can get quite a bit heated, and sometimes a bit comedic as well with some of the things that is said. But I also do the occasional bit of do videos as well. Often at the moment, ripping to shreds the CivNats, who are very disingenuous and smear real nationalists with all kinds of ridiculous labels and disingenuous smears. So all I'd say is check out my YouTube channel, and I hope to contribute to the British nationalist movement, which has been doing really well this year. Like, I think a lot of people are feeling very white-pilled about what's going on in this country. It's there's a different vibe at the turn of this year, definitely. Contribute. If you want to contribute, I'm assuming soon enough YouTube might give me enable my super chats. But I do also stream on DLive, hopefully, as well. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Renew Britannia YouTube channel. Check it out.
Excellent. And you were, of course, privy to the very, very silly debate that took place between Harry and the two, what should we call them, based centrists at the weekend on Simon Sideways' channel. Now, you were one of, I believe you're one of Harry's friends. You helped him prepare for that debate. I also spoke to Harry in the run-up to that debate. He asked me some difficult questions and asked how I would answer them. But how did you feel he was treated? And do you feel that this new tactic that has been taken up by these centrists and civic nationalists, is this a new low for them?
It's indeed a new low. They just obfuscate by just making everything a big joke. Just everything's lighthearted. They don't take anything seriously. That's a recurring problem with them, is they don't take a lot of things seriously, because there's a lot of things they don't value. They're severely lacking in that sense. What they did to Harry was, I'll just say it's disgusting. Here's a young man who clearly cares about the future of his people, his civilization. And, they just waste his time by, going along with a debate, So Harry's there thinking, these people are going to have a genuine good faith debate with him. 10 minutes in, they just pull this silly prank where the guy pretends to get knocked out, and then some other chap appears on screen in a superhero costume. It's very, very childish, very juvenile behavior. And these are from people nearly twice his age. So I think that just goes to show you what those two chaps are like. Yeah, it is indeed a new low. And, why can't Sargon just have a debate with you, for example, Mark? They just obfuscate. They just do not want to engage, If they really wanted to get to the bottom and try and resolve, these issues, the differences they have with us, they should be having regular, open, good faith conversations with us. But they don't. They just ignore us. Like, we don't exist. Like, we're not important, or we're crazy. Okay. Obviously, we're not crazy. You and Laura did a fantastic job going surveying the British people, finding out crucial things like, do people, in their gut instinct, do they want to become a minority in their historic homeland? And the answer is no. But, people like Sargon, for example, they'll just obfuscate and ignore that, Oh, it's too inconvenient for their worldview, so they'll just ignore it. But yeah, what they did to Harry was just disgraceful, and it's pathetic. And, you know, it's a win for us because it just shows how cowardly they are.
The interesting thing is, I feel it's a new low for one notable reason. In the past, they used to come at us and use terms like Nazi, use terms like racist, use terms like anti-Semite, and they used to adopt the liberals' talking points. They used to adopt sort of the hope, not hate mantra for why we shouldn't be engaged with. So somebody like Sargon, I know what he said about me behind my back. I'm not really bothered either. He's called me all manner of things. And I thought he was going to come on the debate, and I was very much expecting him to bring up Bookgate. I was very much expecting him to start throwing around the other N word. And I was sort of prepared for this kind of thing. But I think what was a new low about what went on with Harry's debate is it didn't even get to the point where they started going over the old ground. And this new tactic they have of trying to reduce everything to sort of ironic kind of humor or silliness or just outright mockery shows how weak their arguments are. I always remember as a child, if you were, because when you're young, especially young men, they spend a huge amount of time sort of mocking each other and sort of taking the mickey out of each other. That's kind of how young men are. You know, we used to go over to one of my friend's houses, and his family had quite a reasonable sized garage that wasn't used as a garage. And it was used to house sort of an extra sofa, and there was a TV in there. And I remember setting up the TV with the Nintendo 64 and four controllers, and you would sit there sort of late into the evening, and most of the conversation would just sort of be bantering, sort of taking the mickey out of somebody. But if it got to the point where you couldn't respond or had no responses left, the weakest rebuttal to the mockery was for you just to do a stupid laugh to almost try and turn the mockery back on those who were mocking you. And that was always when you knew you'd completely lost, you had nothing left to say, and all you could do was do a stupid laugh and just try to end it there. And that's kind of what they did with the debate. They had nothing left to say, nothing left to do, no avenues left to take. So they ended it in the stupidest, most inane way possible because there was nothing else they could do. They can't argue. They can't push back. And it's really, really strange because the old arguments of like, oh, well, you know, if you got your way, we'd all be speaking German. They don't even go to that anymore. They don't even go down that route anymore. All they can do is try to end the debate with some kind of silly irony or nonsensical gotcha joke. And this is because they're vacuous. They're empty. There's no substance to what these people believe in. And really, they trade off one thing and one thing alone. And that's producing very easy videos based around what I call low-hanging fruit. So 5 years in, they're still talking about, well, feminists are ruining computer games, aren't they, guys? Oh, well, you know, my favorite Hollywood franchise has now got one too many women in it or one too many ethnic minorities. And it's just the same stuff. And I'm not saying those things shouldn't be spoken about. I've produced plenty of videos like that. But there has to be an ideology. There has to be a substance backing all of that. And that's the problem with these civic nationalists. There's no real substance. So when it gets down to making policy, when it gets down to making serious adult discussion, they end up reverting back to that childlike state where their only response to a serious argument or something that actually has substance is almost to laugh in an inane way or make an ironic kind of silly remark to try and just get the spotlight off them so that they don't actually have to justify themselves to a greater degree. Did you see this debate, Jason? And if so, do you have any takes on it?
No, I just saw a little bit because I was immediately disgusted. It's actually one of the things, and perhaps Wesley should think about doing this. My Acmatic video, until YouTube took it down, it had 80,000 views, And I know that's a small number compared to most of the others in the white positive sphere, but for me that was colossal. And it was a video that I saw Worski back when he was, and I don't know where he is now, but he was one of these characters. He was a snarky, snide abstractionist, and there were a handful of others, and they were mocking a female that wasn't present. And I then took some of that video. I don't know how long the video was, maybe total 2 hours or 3 hours. I made a 30-minute video mocking the idiots and pulling out facts for what putting the lie to what they were saying, and then just posted it. And the video did spectacularly because everybody hates these kinds of people. Everybody is disgusted with these kind of guys and women who are just, they can't be serious about everything. They want to claim that every statement they make, they want to be able to backtrack, move the goalposts, say, oh, that was just a joke. Oh, that was just irony. You're taking that, when you defeat their point, they immediately say, oh, you were taking that seriously. This is what Harry was up against, this kind of mindset in these guys. And what it demonstrates is that when you see somebody who does this, they act that way, they behave that way because they don't have the ability to be a man inside of them. They don't have the ability to be serious. They don't have the ability to take a problem or a challenge head on. And so I commend you and Harry, and you all are in the right place by coming to us. This is the place where you want to come up, because it's going to be a crucible the entire way. And you don't want to end up in the circles that these abstractionists float through in the sewage of what and who they are. But you guys are in the right place. I commend you and commend Harry standing up to these guys. And never, if there's ever an opportunity to take them on. And then as soon as they start their weasel behavior, just click it right off. You knew it was going to happen anyhow. Just say goodbye, losers, and just click it right off.
So is there anything else anyone wants to add to the Harry debate, or anyone wants to make any comments about Sargon dodging me? Because if so, do so now, or we're going to move on to what is arguably the biggest topic of the day.
No, I think you two both summed it up pretty well. Yeah, they just, it's just all idealism and abstractions with these people. And they're very cowardly as well. That is the word that really defines these people. So they can't debate you, so they just sort of laugh it off. Because they've got nothing, so we'll just leave it there.
Well, we have now been in this bizarre coronavirus lockdown for a number of weeks, and it's taken its toll on many people, and it has also taken its toll on people's relationships. It's taken a toll on people's businesses. I'm sure it's taken a toll on people's health and fitness, but it appears to be coming to an end. Now, the graphic for this show was quite interesting because people might have thought, what the hell is this? Well, it was actually a picture of a beach in England, because today was the hottest day of the year so far. And apparently Brits have been flocking to the seaside and ignoring social distancing altogether. They have completely ignored the 2 meter rule and just gone out and enjoyed themselves for the first time in a long time. And I wonder whether this is light at the end of the tunnel. I wonder whether this is some kind of a sign that the British people are finally ready to say, we've had enough of this. We're pushing back. It's a lovely day. We're going to go out. We're going to enjoy ourselves. And if we all go out and all enjoy ourselves together, they can't lock us all up. And I personally think this is it's a good thing. But there are a few caveats to this and a few little interesting observations I've had. Now, I get a lot of people just to the left of us, the CivNet, saying, well, no one's ever going to support you guys because you're too hardcore. No one's ever going to support you guys because you don't follow the official propaganda line on certain historical events or occurrences, and that you guys are absolutely unashamedly ethno-nationalists. Now, it's very interesting when people make that assertion, because I go, many of the people who've made that assertion are people who have absolutely pushed back against the lockdown measures and the quarantine that has currently been taking place. And I find that a bit odd, because when I go for my Sunday morning run, I run through four different villages, and I do see a lot of banners saying clap for the NHS. I see a lot of banners that say things like save lives, stay at home. But interestingly, the people that have the save lives, stay at home banners, the people who are out clapping for the NHS every Thursday, the people that seem to have bought the state's propaganda on these issues were also the people who had the most VE Day bunting in their windows on VE Day. And I wonder if there's a correlation between people who buy the official line on certain historical occurrences and people who buy the official line on the coronavirus. And I wonder what split there will be amongst the British public in the forthcoming weeks between those who are very eager to get back out and get their life back to normal, and those who are still following the government line and saying we need social distancing, we shouldn't be going out unless we absolutely have to. And I wonder how the civic nationalists will square that circle, because when you call for something which is essentially revolutionary, a pushback against government rules, you tend to offend the people most likely to follow an official narrative. And they are people that, in other ways, the civic nationalists want to appeal to the most. Now, I find that quite a contradiction. There's a lot I've just said there, but what do you think, Harry? Are we coming to an end here? Will we see another polarizing event like we did with Brexit, but this time over the lockdown? How do you think this is going to unfold?
It's always difficult to know, like, what's propaganda when you get sort of numbers given out by the news about how many people want lockdown restrictions, or, you know, heaven forbid, you know, things like forced vaccines, whatever. We're Britain, aren't we? We're British, so we like liberty. We don't really like being told what to do. I think it's an interesting thing you've identified there, the whole sort of correlation between sort of people that love conformity and conforming to official narratives. I don't actually have any like big brain takes, unfortunately. I just think I would just hope that the government don't sort of waste any more time. I personally have not thought this lockdown was a great idea, nor the way it was done. That's my take on it.
What do you think, Jason? Do you think there's a correlation between people who conform to certain things? Do you think the conformists would ultimately reject the current trend amongst nationalism to want to break the lockdown rules and push back against it?
Well, certainly we see in all of these scenarios. And by the way, folks, if you could let me know how my mic sounds, if it sounds pretty good or too loud, cracking or whatever, I appreciate that, because I'm coming through the behemoth computer. But certainly what we see is the classes of people who have the most to lose, who depend the most, who make the most off of the system, those are the ones who are going to be the most conformist. Those are the ones who are going to say, well, you know, my job is XYZ and I'm making all of this money. I have all of this status. I take the vacations. And if I don't do what they tell me to do, then I'm going to lose all of that. And you go all the way to the other end of the spectrum and you see working class folks where I came from. And they have a lot less to lose as vis-a-vis the regime, whatever the regime might be. And so those are the ones who now you see in the States and we see in the UK, we see other places, they're getting out in their pickup trucks and they're saying, let us go back to work. And of course, we had here in Michigan, we had people go up into the state house with their weapons, with their firearms. Now, it wasn't as radical as the regime made it seem in their media. Ultimately, it was just raining. And then the white people at the doors to this place said to the white people who said, can we get out of the rain? They said, sure. And then there was some shouting on the inside. But you have people down in Texas opening their businesses in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania. The governor in Pennsylvania, this anti-white pig in Pennsylvania, said to some small little business, I will crush you if you open your business here. So the people are beginning to push back because we cannot stay in a state, and this is one of the important things, I think, where I think we have a very different line than some others in the white positive sphere, and that is that these people are our people. These people that are getting out there, it's working class people, whether they own a business. And by the way, if you own a business and you have to be at it every day or every week, you're working for a living. That's not some business owner on top of the world. But if they're checking in quarterly, maybe they're the step up. But these are our people. They need our message. They need to hear from us. And so what you saw on that beach is ripe soil. That is not the actual sand itself. You're not going to grow squat in that. The people who are out there now are fed up and they're tired of the government telling them what to do. And it's a sign that they're rescinding their loyalty. They are actually saying the police, the government, the law enforcement, they're saying stay inside. And all of these normal folks are going out. Those are the people we have to get to. This is the time to get to them. So absolutely, this is a positive sign. Absolutely, it is a sign that people are rescinding their allegiance and looking elsewhere for leaders and thought influencers for them to follow. The parties have failed them, and it's time for us to be there. But Mark, you're absolutely right. This is quite an opportunity, and all of the signs are here that if we move now and we get to these people, we're going to make the most hay.
Well, what I was trying to sort of really get at, I was hoping to sort of bring about a bit of conversation on the issue that the establishment and the media have long called us names like racist, like Nazi, etc., for questioning different narratives. They've said that about our stance on migration, our stance on ethnicity, our stance on the Great Replacement. But interestingly, do either of you believe that at some point in the future, there is going to be a smear leveled at nationalists that you were the people that violated the lockdown. You were the people that didn't take this seriously. You were the people that pushed back against clapping for our carers at 8 p.m. on a Thursday. And I can see you smiling there, Wesley, but there has been cases where people have been publicly shamed. People have been reported to the police over this. People have been held up on Facebook by their neighbors and publicly torn down for not taking part in what can be seen as a huge state propaganda drive. And I wonder whether this could be something, and you've seen it in the media. The media have coined this term COVIDiots that they use to sort of smear and attack anyone that doesn't go along with the official line or that goes out and does a little bit too much exercise or nips to B&Q for a hanging basket when they don't really need it. And I just wonder where this is going to lead. And whereas you might end up having something else added to that list of insults. So you're going to end up ultimately with terms like Nazi, racist, conspiracy theorist, and then corona denier or COVIDiot or something like that. Or even people held up and said, look, these people at one point, these people who are standing in elections now or vying for some form of political power on this date advocated that people shouldn't be forced to go out of their homes and clap, or these people didn't clap loud enough. Are we moving towards a situation where that is going to become part of the narrative that if you don't love your country, you showed that lack of devotion by not clapping loud enough? What do you think to that?
I think it's incredibly ironic that people like us would get smeared as COVIDiots, considering they're the people that are, disseminating the propaganda of the government. I think, Great Britain, so the British people, when you compare to continental Europe, we have, the least trust in our media. So even though obviously that's tragic, it's a shame as a civilization we've got to that point. But nevertheless, what you were highlighting about, the smears, they're just not going to cut it anymore. Okay. That is breaking down. People are starting to actually, listen to things, for example, we as nationalists might be talking about. And I think, you're absolutely right about, about this whole situation with COVID, I think a lot of people, once we've gotten over this era, they'll look back and think, yeah, actually, wasn't it really ridiculous how the government deliberately plunged its own people into a huge economic recession for what? You know, this could have been handled so much better. And we close the economy and yet we can't close our borders. I mean, I think that just says it all, doesn't it? Completely incompetent. No one trusts the media. So, you know, more than ever, you know, this is an opportunity for us to say, look, we are for, you know, the people. We are doing the things in the interest of the British people. We want people to be free, free from the government globalist tyranny that we have, you know. Clearly, there's something fishy going on when your governments, all these governments are forcing themselves into economic recession, yet they just can't close the borders. It's very fishy.
Yes, it's the economic retard for these retards, I guess is what we could say. I hope in all cases, and I'll just say quickly, and then we can keep moving to whatever you want to talk about, Mark, and that is this, that anti-whites are going to take every scenario that happens in the real world, and they are going to fit it into their anti-white narrative, which is what they force us to live by as the real world. That's not the real world at all. It's complete fiction. They'll take the real world, they'll bury it underfoot. I mean, we just had a jogger jogging with a hammer through a construction site, and there are people being murdered in a two old people being murdered. They've gone to see their family member in their grave. And then this anti-white, non-white guy decides to kill them in revenge because the anti-whites are spreading this anti-white narrative across the country that is only believable in anti-white fiction. Nowhere in America has anybody ever witnessed that. What they're claiming, the kinds of things that just said, well, there's a non-white person jogging and then they're going to just go harm this person. That does not happen. It happens on TV. It happens in the movies. It happens in these sorts of places. So they're going to take what's happening in the real world. So let's say this happens. The COVID cases go up a little bit. Well, you know what they're going to write into the anti-white narrative. It's going to be, well, the whatever names they want to call you, whatever anti-white slurs, populists, racists, whatever it might be, it's their fault because they went to the beaches. It wouldn't matter if the people that went to the beaches were completely, every single one of them, completely confused about what sex they were. The media would still say after the fact, oh, they were all nationalists. They were all just these rebels against the system. And that those are the problem people. So in all of the scenarios, they're going to write us in to be the bad guys in every situation. So we hope that they do that. And the reason why is because all of those people that went out to the beaches, all of these people that are driving up in their big trucks, jacked up high enough that you could walk under without having to bend down, those are red-blooded white folks, Western kind, all around the world. They're our people, and we can get to them when they are being called by these anti-white slurs for wanting to work, for wanting to get out of the house because they don't know how to get along with each other anymore because they're infected with so many mean pathogens. And the final thing I'll say, and I'll toss it back, is this. This, and we have it in the United States too, where they're saying, oh, you should be so grateful. And Mark, we talked about that on this program before it started, where we said they are going to, the anti-whites are going to tell us that we need to be grateful to the non-white people that are serving in the medical establishment, serving in law enforcement, serving in the military. We need to be grateful for them that we're not all sick and dead with COVID-19. And indeed, that's the anti-white narrative. That's what came forward. Well, guess what? I'm not going to be grateful to anyone of those individuals on the basis of their race because they took the jobs that are ours. Why would I thank somebody that has thieved a job from my people, that has thieved a job from people that I know? There were spots at universities that white people worked their asses off to get into, doctor, et cetera, nurse, et cetera, tech, et cetera, and they weren't allowed into those jobs because they were white people and they're allowed to be discriminated against. They inflicted that harm on them. These people then went to these universities. These people then were taken into these jobs as quotas and the like. And then the regime, these anti-white bastards, have the nerve to come out and say, you should really thank those non-white doctors that are taking care of you. Get bent, buddy. I'm not thanking a single one for the job they stole from us, not on the basis of their race. Now, if they save somebody's life, that's something different. But on the basis of their race, forget about it. I'll pass it back.
Thank you. Well, there are another couple of topics I would like to talk about today. I've noticed that me calling myself a jogger has caused much amusement in the chat. But something else that has been in the news quite a bit today was Nigel Farage's little trip out onto the ocean, where he saw a dinghy full of migrants heading towards the UK. And he informed the Coast Guard, and apparently the French Coast Guard were there actually helping these people make their way over to Britain. And one thing that hasn't changed in all of this, one thing that never, ever seems to change, the one constant that we can never get away from is immigration. Because even in a global lockdown, we still seem to manage to find tens of thousands of people crossing our borders on a daily basis. But these migrant crossings, they are continuing, and the government doesn't seem to be too bothered about social distancing when it comes to this stream of newcomers. What was your thoughts on this article, Wesley?
I think it just goes to show you again, like, so they didn't close the borders, and they have these double standards for migrants. I mean, I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, it's almost like we're just used to it now, aren't we? We're just used to being second class. We're used to being treated worse. We're used to, you know, people who shouldn't even be here, legally shouldn't even be here, being treated better than people who are citizens of this country. It's ridiculous that, you know, Nigel, who is a politician, is having to go out and do journalism, for goodness sake. That's where we're at. It's ridiculous. And the government doesn't care. It's almost as if they want it to take place. Who knows?
Well, I think they certainly do. I think this is all part of the plan. Although I find it quite interesting that Nigel Farage is out doing these things, not because he's a politician. I don't think it should be his job. I think it's very good if politicians go out and highlight these things. But my issue with Nigel Farage is he seems to flip-flop on his positions to do with immigration so regularly. And it wasn't long ago that he said he was bored with politics and didn't want anyone discussing politics or political parties on his radio show because it was time to move on from that. But now he seems maybe this stunt might catapult him into the limelight again. He might have another crack at the good old political game. Who knows? But I don't think Nigel Farage, for all of the good points he has ever actually presented a viable solution to the immigration problem. And I think one thing that was very notable about Nigel Farage and his sort of toadying to the system is how every time it comes to the issue of talking about ethnicity, he always absolutely toes the media line in a desperate attempt to be accepted by the establishment. And when it came to the actual time when he did have a winning hand, when he held quite a lot of powerful cards in his hand and could really have done a lot of damage to the political establishment, in the end, he cucked. In the end, he helped hand Boris Johnson this gigantic majority. And I think in terms of immigration, Boris Johnson and Boris Johnson's government, I believe, will be the worst government Britain's ever seen when it comes to migration numbers. Do you two have any takes on that?
I'll just quickly say, I mean, if anybody listening to this still thinks that the Conservative Party deserves the badge of being called conservative, it's just a joke. It's not conservative to see your nation be replaced under your watch with only a few decades, you know. You know, England, for example, as a country, as a nation, has existed for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's not very conservative to be so lax with the borders. You know, Boris Johnson is just a liberal guy. You know, but people, you know, loads of people in the general public are like, yeah, he's our guy, because what he said a few crude things in a few articles a few years ago. Therefore, Boris is based and is going to be our guy. And it's like, look, he's not been in long, and evidently he's not going to do anything that's going to slow down these changes, address our concerns. The points-based thing is, it's not good enough. And bringing it back to Nigel, Nigel, to some extent, I sympathize with him. He's going up against the machine, the establishment. He has to play the game a bit, but he still toes this line of, oh, we should still have some immigration. It should just be a lot lower. It's like, why can't you just say, Nigel, close the border? Why do we need any? We don't need any more immigrants. There's no reason to have any more. Why? You know, and in a perfect world, you know, all these parties would have emigration manifestos, not immigration manifestos. But yeah, I just find it ridiculous. He set up the Brexit party, and what he's still saying, like, oh yeah, we'll have a more fair system that lets anybody in. And it's also really sad as well, because he was the leader of UKIP, and you know, UKIP was seen as the most right wing party. Sets up the Brexit party, and who does he get as an MEP? One of his politicians in his party was an anti-white person going on about, oh, there's not enough representation. You know, it's just ridiculous. So he's I think he's lost his way to let all that happen. Yeah, he's not hardline enough. Boris is a liberal. I'll leave it at that.
What are your thoughts on this, Jason? Do you think you've seen similar things in America? Because I would say that what Boris is going to do in the UK is almost a British version of what Trump has done in America. Because as of now, and we are very close to Trump fighting for re-election, would you say that he's actually achieved any of the things that he's promised?
No, not on any substantive level. I mean, you have to really bend the definition of his promises to come anywhere close to any of those promises. So it's a redefinition of the promises, and it's done by disingenuous people. You have Donald in the U.S., and then you have Down syndrome Donald in the U.K., and you see this continuity of agenda from one party to the next. This is why I worked on the Hill in D.C., and I saw it firsthand. This is why when it is one of these establishment, one of these regime parties, you put no faith in them. This is why we talk about when it comes to somebody like Mark, somebody like myself, somebody like Wesley, when we're standing up for white well-being, then you support us. And you can support us all the way up to Parliament, and Mark remakes the UK. And you support it every step of the way, as long as Mark is white positive the entire way. That is how you prevent those who actually hold the power behind the scenes from usurping what's actually taking place in the party. So you see, when you these folks, you got the guy out in his little paddle boat out there, and it's so sweet. And he's seeing the, you know, the migrants are just the poor little migrants, all the little brown. I'm sure all of them were infants and they were crying, and they just lost their mothers. I'm just, you know, waiting for the anti-white story to come out about that. And we're probably all murdered by white men. But the reality is that the reason why these people can't do anything in government, and the reason why we need to stop putting our faith in them and stop giving them a pass. And we can't remember who we were talking to, Mark. It was like a year ago about this issue. You end up giving these people a pass all the way until they're out of office. And then they're still given passes even after, because they're still not telling the truth. And well, you know, they still got to feed their family. Well, they still got to, you know, they still want to be able to go out to restaurants. No, enough with the passes. Enough. If you are witnessing that these people are puppets. And I don't mean literally, I don't mean that somebody has to come down. This is not how the human dynamism works. They don't get them on the phone in the morning and say, you're going to do X, Y, Z. These people just know what's rewarded and what's punished. And then, seeking their own self-interests, they pursue it in whatever way that they are equipped, innately intelligent with their intelligence and the connections that they have to make it happen. And sometimes with people like Trump, it's brilliantly. They are able to pull it off, serve the people who hold the real power behind the scenes, and really make it look like they're an agent of change. Other times, they're absolutely inept, and they have the last name Robinson, and they just make it really clear that they're serving another group of people's interests the entire time. So that is the reality of this political atmosphere. And so far we can see when it comes to the UK that Mark is serving white well-being. And I have every faith that he'll continue serving white well-being. And as long as he does, and he continues to do it with the morality and the honesty and the conviction and ethics that he does it with, we all should continue to support him all the way up until he takes the crown.
I'm not sure if I'm going to take the crown. I think King Mark might be a little bit far-reaching even for me. But one thing I will add to this, and I'd really like Wesley's take on this before we do some questions and super chats. In a very real sense, I do actually respect the Labour Party more than I respect the Conservative Party, because the Labour Party are anti-white. They are pro-migration, they are pro-open borders, they are pro-freedom of movement, but they're very, very honest about that. And they lost the last election on the basis of their honesty. They wore their cultural Marxist colours on their chest, and everyone saw them. Everyone saw the nonsense about pronouns. Everyone saw the nonsense about open borders. Everyone saw their BAME manifesto, a special manifesto that excluded the indigenous people. And no one liked it. People turned their nose up at it. And absolutely 110% rightly so. However, when you look at Conservative Party policy, it is almost identical to that of the Labour Party. But they market it in such a disingenuous way that the general public actually think it's some form of nationalism or some form of patriotism. And I think because of that, I actually dislike the Conservative Party slightly more. I actually look at the Conservative Party and think, well, you guys are ultimately, absolutely more of a threat than the Labour Party. Because with the Labour Party, if you vote for them, you know what they're getting. But many people voted Conservative thinking they were getting a vast reduction of migration, only to be sat locked in their houses as 15,000 migrants per day flood in to take the jobs that they're not allowed to do. And I think that level of trickery has to be frowned upon more than the honesty of the Labour Party. And that doesn't mean I want to go and vote Labour. That's not a ringing endorsement of the Labour Party. I mean, I absolutely have nothing but contempt for both of those parties. But I would rather deal with an honest enemy that tells me his true intention than deal with someone who pretends to be a friend but has the intention of an enemy. What's your thoughts on that, Wesley?
The Conservative Party, well, themselves, they don't stand for anything. They've conserved nothing. They've basically adopted left-wing morality. You know, the five ones we all know: don't be racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic. You know, so they've completely conceded to the left. So in that sense, how can they beat the left or repel the left? You know, if they've already conceded to them, moral framework. It's so they're not going to get anywhere. Pete, it's going to take a lot, but we have to keep telling people over and over and over again until they get it. The Conservative Party, they're not just conservative. They stand for nothing. At least liberals like Sargon, I respect them for having a position, even if we don't agree with it. The Conservative Party itself stands for nothing. It exists to gain power, and that is it. That is why they do whatever it takes to just about get the vote. That's it. Look how reluctant they were to get Brexit done. And I agree with you about Labour. I say this on my show. It's a good thing how radical and anti-white and just far left, however you want to call it, they went as of late, because they're extremely arrogant and they're putting it all on show for everyone to see, and that's really what we want. I know it's counterintuitive because it's like, well, why do we want a load of people demonizing us, saying how much they hate us, putting forward all of these policies that are going to harm us and all of that stuff? But we know they're the enemy. We know what they're really about. And that's why we want them just saying what they think about us. And the Conservatives, They'll do nothing. The worst thing about them, perhaps, is the fact that they don't fight any cultural battles. Okay, they fight no cultural battles. When you watch them on Question Time, whatever, you know, they'll just say enough so that they're perceived as the stable party that will just, you know, keep things chuntering along. But ultimately, there will be no change. There will be no rightward momentum. And you see, it's always been the case with the Tory party. It always takes something to the right of them, even though they're supposed to be a right-wing party. It always takes something to the right of them to pull the Overton window back to the right. They are completely useless, treacherous party. And I don't see much getting done at all under their reign. I mean, they've already had, 10 years of power. And what have they used for that? They've allowed transgender people to be able to freely choose their gender on their birth certificate. I mean, that's not very conservative, is it? You know, I think it is a real shame, just bringing it to Labour. It is a shame that Keir Starmer won. I would have wanted one of the more radical people to win because I've put a tweet out saying this. It's always dangerous. Really, really dangerous when Labour is seen as a moderate, reasonable, centrist, however you want to phrase it, party. Because that's when they get votes. That's how Tony Blair won. And that's how he ultimately finished this country off. And they'll do it again if Keir Starmer was to win. And hey, look, this week, oh, it turns out, yeah, the Conservatives are, you know, we're at an all-time popularity. But now the reasonable, well-spoken, not full-on communist Keir Starmer is in charge of the Labour Party. Oh, look, now they're a bit more well-perceived. And it's like, we don't want this, okay? They're still a left-wing party. They're still going to push unhealthy ideas, destructive ideas on society. It's just all about appearance, okay? And of course, you can expect the Tory party to do nothing, just roll over, just let it happen, you know, because come next election time, they'll just say the right things, just give a nod and a wink. And there we are again. The British electorate is convinced, hey, they'll get it done. And we have to keep stressing over and over again, nothing is going to change. It doesn't matter who the leader is. It's not going to change. That's why we need some other kind of entity in right-wing politics to basically conform, you know, make them conform to, you know, real right-wing ideas and pull them over, because it's not going to happen unless there is something else.
As well said, Wesley. I'll just very quickly say, Mark, just two things. I think what makes us so vexed when it comes to conservatives and the like, is that they are taking the people who would most readily be our audience. They are bamboozling them. They're playing the flute, and they're mesmerizing them when these are the folks that should be coming over to our position. And that is what's most infuriating. The folks out there that are going to immediately leap right on to any sort of anti-white slogan, we know that they are far way away from deciding, well, maybe I should care about my people because maybe my people has something to do with this country and the culture and et cetera. So that is why they are most vexatious. And then the second thing I want to say is the politics, whether it's extreme anti-white or something that's a little milquetoast anti-white, the reason why it is this way is because it is taking place inside of the anti-white narrative's morality. So you can only go so far in the other direction against the anti-white morality before you become immoral by the anti-white standards. And since they're controlling the nerve centers in society, they can declare you verboten. They can declare you heretical. And as a consequence, the only way to combat that is to get out of their story. That's why we talk about going free into our own story, where we write in that we are the heroes, a new morality. And then we challenge our brothers and sisters on the streets and our families at the dinner table. And we say, tell us why it's moral to eradicate my people, because I'm not going to agree with any argument that ends up being anti-white. Now go ahead and try to make your argument. People aren't going to be able to make, very few people are going to be able to say to you, no, absolutely, I firmly believe that we should be eradicated. It's just rare. So we have to get out of their story, or we're going to be in this, what Wesley was just talking about, and we hear about in the United States all the time, is just, well, the conservative is only conservating 20 years ago. Yes, because that's the anti-white morality, just moving down the train track to our oblivion. I'll pass it back to you, Mark.
Well, thank you. I think that's a very important point about Keir Starmer as well, that we've started to discuss, that the Labour Party here have tried to elect to leadership another Tony Blair, somebody who would, on the basis of his background, the way he speaks, the positions he's held, the fact that he is a sir, he's a knight of the realm. If you look into what he was knighted for, it's very, very dodgy as well. I was going to make a video about that guy, but I think I'll wait till election time to do a video about why he got his knighthood and who he seemingly, allegedly protected whilst he was working in the role that he gained the knighthood. And a few people in the chat will understand exactly what I'm talking about. But Labour have seemingly elected to leadership somebody they hope to be another Tony Blair, another slippery man who's going to appeal to the broad middle class, get Labour elected, so that they won't be wearing their cultural Marxist colours quite as brightly on their sleeve as they were doing when Jeremy Corbyn, who is by no means a great guy, but is far more honest, was in charge. Anyway, it is time to do the super chats and the questions. So the link is in the chat now if you haven't super chatted, if you haven't asked a question you want to, but let's get started. Grim Fan gave $5 and says, families of immigrant healthcare workers who die of COVID to be given support and indefinite leave to remain, as if doctors aren't pressured enough to put COVID on every death certificate without de posse descending. So what do you think of that then, Wesley? Families of immigrant healthcare workers who die of COVID-19 to be given support and indefinite leave to remain. So this again plays into the migration narrative that these people are heroes and they're dying for us. So their families and their descendants then get a claim to our homeland. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's just ludicrous, isn't it? How on earth does a country get here? It's all I can assume is that this must be something. It can't be the Conservatives, right? It'd be a leftover policy or whatever enacted by Tony Blair's government, I would assume. But then again, as I just pointed out with the transgenderism thing, the Conservatives do surprise us. But it's just ridiculous. Yeah, you're right about why should they get a claim to our land? Because someone died? It's anything, absolutely anything, any excuse to just give someone who should not belong here, citizenship. Absolutely any reason they can find, and it's usually based on have empathy, have sympathy for these people. What, complete strangers, who I've never seen, and who, just shouldn't be here. The borders should be closed, and there's nothing wrong with saying that.
Well, one thing I want to note about this particular issue is when I did my large stream on the coronavirus, I said I believe that the narrative behind the coronavirus would soon shift, and the shift in narrative would move to a position where we were being told that on one hand, the real victims of the virus were migrants. On the other hand, we would be told that the real heroes fighting to stop the virus were migrants. And the final outcome from this was that the economy and the country were damaged, and the only way to rebuild it was by accepting more migrants. And I believe absolutely wholeheartedly that what Grim Fan, who super chatted this $5, is saying plays into that narrative, that yet again, the one outcome from this that is guaranteed, because there's lots of debates about the vaccines, about people's health, about people's liberty, but one thing that will be absolutely guaranteed and nailed on is that migration will play a role in this. And when I say play a role, it will be a role that we don't want it to play. This won't be a reduction in migration. Like any sensible leader would say, well, this came here from abroad, maybe checks at borders, maybe locking things down in terms of freedom of movement would be a good thing. But this will result in the opposite. If anything, coronavirus will lead to more people coming here. And if anyone can find an article where the headline says something like this, I'd be gratefully appreciative of it, because I always love how liberals write articles which have nonsensical headlines like this. Right-wingers claim stopping migration would have halted the coronavirus. If anything, stopping migration would have sped the spread of coronavirus. And there's always something like this, where an obvious stop to a problem is then turned on its head by sort of the media. And we are told that actually the logical solution to the problem would actually make the problem far worse. You know, that's a sort of water is flooding into the boat, but right wingers claim we should stop water flooding into the boat. But by stopping water flooding into the boat, that might cause us to sink a lot faster. You know, that's a classic liberal headline. But that's the kind of thing I'm waiting to see after this, that, you know, we were too xenophobic, and that's why the disease has struck us. And only by opening our hearts more could we have actually got through this with less deaths and less suffering. But we will see. That's my prediction. Do you guys have anything to add to this before we move on?
Xenophobia is what's killing us.
I'll quickly say that in the United States, we have a record number of bills moving through Congress right now that are race-based. And I just did a video on one called the Heroes Act. And it is the most, of course, they call it heroes, you know. So it is the most egregious thing you could ever imagine. It starts off with all of these wonderful things that everybody, most people would be happy for. Things like if you have defaults during this period, however long they declare the emergency for, that none of it would be allowed to go on your credit. They start off with $1,000 extra for each child. So you get people thinking, oh, that sounds good. More tax breaks based on your income. So the people thinking that's okay, that sounds good. More loans for small businesses, loans for students, or grants rather, for students, so that they can deal with this debt that they have incurred but didn't get to take part in the classes. And then it gets on to hiring the most affected groups. Now, of course, that's going to be non-white people, and they're going to be hired and trained to surveil people who have the first mission will be to surveil and track people who are believed to have COVID or who have had COVID. And then, you know, the mission will change, because also in this bill is a hate hotline where you can call in anonymously to say this person or that person. And it works exactly like the red flag laws. This went through Congress in a day. It went through the House in a day. It's over in the Senate now. And, people are saying, well, it should be able to be stopped because of all of these sorts of things. But of course, how are the feckless Republicans going to be able to stand up to $1,000 per child and no bad marks on your credit for defaults and this sort of thing? So these are the kinds of things that are moving forward. And there are ones out there right now that are even worse. So the anti-whites are doing what they do. Immigration is a way to harm us. It's not a way to help non-white people. It's just one of the many ways that anti-whites can harm us. But very well said, Wesley.
All right, we'll move on. Tim gave $5 and said, no white guilt. Do you think Trump might be the last Republican president of the U.S. given the changing demographics? Texas will flip in 2024.
This is a great question, and thank you for it, whoever asked that, because it's a great demonstration, and it's not your fault. It's a great demonstration of static thinking, and even our very highest IQ folks, they get caught up in this static thinking as though the definition of what a Republican is today will remain the same. The definition of what a Republican was 20 years ago couldn't get elected today, and so the Republican Party will continue to exist. Will there be a Republican that looks anything like a Republican making the promises today? But remember, what's important is the question is also based in a fundamental misunderstanding of what's happening when a candidate makes promises and then gets into offices. Those promises are not being fulfilled. The promises are to get him or herself into the public trough so that they get the best medical care in the world, so that they get the fame, they get the money for the rest of their lives. And then they just do whatever those in power, controlling the media, controlling the money, whatever they want them to do. Not that they're picking up the phone, but that they know there are rewards and punishments based on certain behaviors. So the Republican Party will continue to exist. The real question that should be asked or could be asked is, will there ever be another white man in a high office, and starting with the president? Will there ever be another white man in that office? And the answer is probably no, because he won't be able to be anti-white to overcome this rapidly ballooning anti-whiteism, which states that all things white, all no matter how anti-white they are still evil. So yeah, he might be the last white man to hold the office in the United States.
Well, that is certainly something to contemplate. Arcade Outpost gave $3 and said, "Mark, the Atheism is Unstoppable channel, friendly with Sargon, seems to be working on some kind of video about you pulling info from an old documentary about you. Making of is on his second channel." Yeah, Atheism Unstoppable is pathetic. He's a complete gimp. He decided he was going to debate me about a certain historical occurrence. He came off worst for this when he said he believed in the roller coasters of death. Everyone laughed at him. Many people are still laughing now. And he holds a grudge against me because of this and is still sort of chuntering on about it. This happened years ago. The guy's just a cringe merchant, basically. And the fact he doesn't even show his face and hides behind a silly kangaroo avatar, so to go, it's just another one of these sad centrist morons who picks the low-hanging fruit. And he just can't get over this. Ethan Ralph invited me on the heel stream, and he sort of slyly set up a bit of a wrangle between me and Atheism and is Unstoppable over the roller coasters of, and I brought up the roller coasters of death. And by the end of it, Atheism is Unstoppable went off in a bit of a huff. Everyone laughed, but he's been sore about it ever since. So that's the full story. I'm not really bothered what he's up to. I think he's a bit of a gimp. JP gave $10 and said, "Where can we see the debate of Harry from True UK and Simon Sideways?" Was that who he was debating, Simon Sideways?
Simon now has a debating YouTube channel, so I'm assuming you can find it on there. It's probably his most recent one, half an hour long. So that's where I think people can find it.
If anyone can post the link in the chat, then JP can see it. So thank you for the super chat. Serena JB gave £3. Huge congratulations to No White Guilt on Prometheus Rising. And it's good to see some great new young talent in our movement. Yes, it is on both of those counts. Blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you very much. He said Ramsey Paul didn't sell out. He just wanted a topless co-host. So Tina is out and Styx is in. White Wellness gave £3 and said, "Sorry for this blatant self-promotion. To anyone in the southeast of England, here is a group of nationalists." And he sent me a Telegram link. So I'm just going to check this out to make sure it's legitimate. He says it is. It looks like it is. So it's in the chat. Obviously, proceed with care. But there's his link. So thank you very much for the super chat. Supernova 808 gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, "Keep up the good work." Benedict gave $30. Thank you very much. He said, "Excellent show tonight. Wesley needs to set up Entropy on his channel." Do so, Wesley, and then we can super chat you. Yehuda Finkelstein gave $10 and said, "My friend recently stopped talking to me due to his liberal girlfriend, Karen from Portland. Is there any way to red pill these people?" Well, I'm going to give my opinion on this and we'll go round the group. I don't care if people stop talking to me because they don't like my views. In fact, that makes my life easier. I have enough people in my life who want to talk to me without adding hassle to my life by trying to talk to people who don't want to talk to me. And these people are negative. Now, I get a lot of people writing to me saying, "Hey, Mark, have you ever had a girlfriend who's not wanted to be with you because of your views? Have you ever had friends who don't want to be friends with you because of your views?" And the answer is yes. And I'm better off without them. absolutely better off. And I say this to all young people. If you're a young person, and if you're a young man and your girlfriend is a complete and utter little madam, and she's telling you that you can't believe in these things or watch those videos, and you won't be invited round to her parents' house if you hold those views, tell her to get lost and bin her off. And if you're a young girl and you've got a boyfriend who says similar things to you or is a total liberal cuck, bin him off, okay? If you're moving forward in your life and you want to get somewhere, you need to be surrounded by people who are on the same mission as you. And that is at its most important in your personal life and in your immediate personal life or home life. If you have a partner who is dragging you back, holding you back, doesn't want you to do the things that you are invested in, doesn't want you to follow your heart, get rid of them, because they're only going to ruin your life and stop you from following your dreams. You need to find somebody who is like the wind beneath your wings, not someone who clips your wings. And the best thing I did, no matter how hard it was at the time, getting rid or breaking up with women that I may have cared about that weren't on the same mission as me, in the long run, they were baggage. They were clipping my wings. They were dragging me down. You need to find a partner and you need to find friends who are like the wind beneath your wings and help to carry you to the places you want to be. That is really important. The more negative influences and the more people around you that tell you you can't succeed or that you're on the wrong path, you just don't want that. You don't want that. You don't need that. And ultimately, you're better off without it. What's your take on that? I know what Jason's is going to be, but he's still going to get to say it. But anyway, hit us with your thoughts.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, look, the thing is, right, if, for example, if it's, you know, you've got a partner, for example, being, for example, a nationalist, okay, it's not just about you, okay, and whether you know, you feel like you can fully express yourself. If you can't push nationalist ideas, you know, that's not a good thing, because it's for the collective, it's for the future of your people. Okay, you do not want to be with, if you are aware of what's going on, you understand the plight of your people, you understand the destruction of our civilization. Basically, the writing is on the wall. You know, everybody needs to start adopting a healthy mindset and start being more responsible again, you know, and pushing ideas and values that will ultimately repair us, because we are very much damaged at the moment. And it's not good if you are aware of what's going on, you know, to be continuing a relationship where you're going to be bogged down, dragged down by someone who doesn't care, is just selfish or whatever. I appreciate it's very hard for a lot of young people, because so many people go to university, which is just anti-white Marxist, often just utter leftist nonsense. The environment, what the academics obviously teach the students, just the environment. It's a very adolescent environment as well. It's just all about partying a lot of the time. There's no sort of culture to instill any maturity, for example, long-term thinking, all of that kind of stuff. So I appreciate that if you are a nationalist or a conservative-minded person or whatever, you know, it is going to be hard, because most of your peers are going to be wrapped up in this very liberal live and let live environment. But absolutely, you should try and, you know, keep friends who, you know, agree with you, because, you know, you're going to strengthen each other, and you're going to do good. You want to be around people who are going to basically encourage you to do good, and you encourage them to do good. It's not good to be wasting time with people who aren't invested or just don't care about the future of the country, civilization they live in. It's a waste of time.
I agree completely. Every time, and this is going to be, I'll just be very quick. I know we got a bunch of great questions and we're going to be getting to all of them, and that is this. everybody out there, irrespective of your age, but of course for young people especially, you want to interview the person that you're interested in, and you want to sort of feel them out metaphorically. Before you get to the feeling them out literally, feel them out metaphorically, and you want to drop some. You want to see if the person, your odds that you're going to find somebody who's white positive is slim. So you're going to find somebody who might be amenable to white positivity. You just don't want to come across, if you come across a rabid anti-white, and this is what I've never had a woman say to me, oh, well, you care about white people too much, I'm gone. Because before that happens, I've determined that she doesn't care about white people enough. And I say, you're gone to her. So that is what you do. You drop a little bit of this here, and then you walk away from the comment, and then you come back. You don't want to make them seem, because they're in the anti-white narrative. They're gonna think that you're gonna bowl them over. You know, you're gonna make one little comment, and then the next thing is going to be you're going to put up some certain banner or something in the house or whatever. So you drop something, you see if they're amenable. Do they seem friendly to it? If so, then you can begin working with them, and you just take them as far along the path as they will go. And if that's not very far, then you immediately get rid of them and you move on. Now, when it comes to these friends, remember, you can only have a specific number. You can't have, I mean, even when it comes to just like associates, you can only have so many people that you can talk to. You can only have so many people that are actual friends. So if you have one that is anti-white, jettison that person so that you can fill that spot with a decent person who cares about white well-being, with a decent person who's going to care about you and the things you care about. Somebody's not a friend if they find out that you care about the future of white children and they think that is immoral. That's not a friend.
I absolutely agree. And I've also got to add this. If you were to say to anybody in the modern world that you had any kind of degenerate leaning, if you liked walking around in a fursuit, or you liked in your spare time wearing a nappy for sexual purposes, and then somebody to ask, well, I'm a bit uncomfortable about that, they would be called a bigot. But if you turn around and say, you know what, I really love my people and I want to ensure they remain a majority in their ancestral homeland, people somehow have the right to say, whoa there, fella, you better change your views or I'm not going to be friends with you anymore. Well, give these people the middle finger and treat them with the absolute contempt they deserve. And when it comes to women, usually, if a woman loves you and you're a strong man, you will be able to turn her your way anyway. And the vast majority of women I've been with, I have red-pilled. It's something that naturally happens, because healthy women want a strong man who's going to take the lead. So that's quite enough on that topic, but I hope that helps. I hope all that advice helps. Anyway, we'll move on. Alt Fit gave £10. Thank you very much. He says, hello, friends. I'm back at work and it feels good. I feel useful again and with a purpose, a cog in the machine. I have come to realize that if a government can dictate at the drop of a hat whether we can have the right to work or not, they control us completely. And that's the point about Corona, isn't it? I agree, actually. A lot of people have put forward what could be termed conspiracy theories. A lot of people have put forward lots of different ideas about coronavirus, but I believe it is genuine. But somebody said to me, I can't remember who it was, and I apologize to the person who said it because I've forgotten exactly who said it. But they said, in fact, I remember, I think it was Patrick Slattery. He said, an effective government never lets a good crisis go to waste. And I believe the government saw this coming. I believe they allowed it to spread. And I believe they have used this to take away our liberties, but not just to take away our liberties, but to see how much control we would be willing to hand to them, to see how far they could push this totalitarian state, how much they could do, how many tricks they could get us to perform, how much state conformity they could force out of us. And based on that, I think they've got some pretty good data. And as I was saying earlier, I find there's a huge correlation here between conformity on lots of official lines of thinking and conformity from those same people on the coronavirus. What do you think about this, Harry and Jason? Do you think the whole point of this lockdown was just to see how much control they had?
It's the second time you've called me Harry, unfortunately, Mark.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, dear. Sorry, mate.
So many based young Zoomers now in the movement, haven't we?
Yeah, when Harry comes on next, I'll call him Wesley as sort of revenge for you. God, sorry about that.
Oh, God. What were we talking about again? Sorry.
The government, did they enforce this lockdown to see how far they could get with us?
It's not just government interest, is it? Of course, there are people who, you know, have certain influence in the way the economy works and, you know, who control the money. You know, it benefits them to just plunge the economy into this chaos because, of course, they've rigged the economy as such that it enriches them. You know, I know it seems counterintuitive, like what? How does destroying the economy enrich these people? Believe me, they're very clever. So you always have to keep that in mind. It's not just the government. There's plenty of other shadowy people who have their own, you know, agenda. Being anti-white is one of them. It suits them to do this to us. It's just all part of the managed destruction, really, isn't it? You're absolutely right. Of course. Why wouldn't they jump on board this? It's a perfect excuse to put through legislation to take away our liberties, etc.
Well said, Harry. I'm kidding. what I'll say is this, that when the disease first made itself apparent in a non-white country, going free perfectly predicted the way the anti-whites would behave. So we could predict, and we did, that since it showed up in a non-white country, that they would say, and this is what all of the regime's media said, the professors were saying, the doctors were saying in government, they were all saying, no big deal, no big deal. It's just going to be a cold. You know, however, if it had started in Switzerland, or if it had started in the UK, or if it had started in Louisiana, they'd have said, into the world, especially if it was from a non-white area in Louisiana. A white area, they would say, end of the world, this is the worst thing ever. However, once it made its way around the world and they saw that it was something real, people were getting very ill, it spread very easily, the people that were getting it were getting really bizarre symptoms, they then said, push forward all of the anti-white agenda. And part of pushing forward every anti-white agenda is measuring, as you're saying, Mark, measuring what exactly is the public going to accept? What are they going to put up with? Are they going to put up with us saying that they can't go to work until they are absolutely impecunious? Or are they going to allow us to take away their right to self-defense? But of course, they want to do both of those things. It's part of the anti-whiteism. So all of this, if looked through the lens of how we view anti-whiteism and going free, it all is very clear. And we can also retrodict, that's what makes it so clear when we look back in time, exactly how we got to where we are today. But yeah, Mark, you're exactly right. They're busily taking notes about how bad will it have to be next time for us to be able to push X, Y, or Z on the public, because there was some resistance here and some apathy there.
Thank you. I agree with you both, especially Harry's takes. Harry's takes are just... This is I'm so sorry, Wesley. Wesley, when you see me next, whenever we're at an establishment, I owe you a drink. So you can call on me. I am sorry. The thing that gave $10. The British government has not been handling the coronavirus very well, and Britain has one of the highest death tolls in Europe. How do you think this will influence the political situation in Britain? I think this could have a huge, huge effect. And the reason I think this will have an effect is because the government was meant to be an anti-migration, closed borders, quota country. It was Australian style point system. That's what they need, shouts the boomers. And really, for a government that basically prided themselves on all of these things and fought an election on those particular issues, for them to get this so wrong, for them to let this disease in to such a degree, and for the death toll to be so, so high, I think this will be very damaging. And I also think when it comes to the next election, the big point will be that the Conservatives let the Cheltenham Festival go ahead and then instituted the lockdown after that. And I think the narrative the left may push will be one of, well, the Tories kept things going so their friends could go horse racing and then locked it down. And this was all to our detriment. I think the left will push that and make out that it was sort of greedy, self-serving Conservatives wanting another weekend of horse racing that put us all at risk. What do you think to this, Harry?
Did you realize you did it again, or
I'm doing it automatically now by mistake? This is getting really embarrassing. Oh my god,
it's gonna be the highlight of the night
in my brain now. That wasn't even a joke. This is terrible. Two drinks every time,
in hard to tell.
You get another drink. His name is
Wesley. I'll be absolutely wasted. I think, so they're not going to be. So the people now are still voting Conservative because they still see them as, well, they don't do a whole lot of great stuff. They don't really push a whole lot of, you know, sort of Conservative things. But to borrow Theresa May's thing, they are still seen as the stable party that, you know, not going to be as chaotic as having, you know, a left-wing party in government. But I think this is just another thing that will show up their incompetence. They're just very much lackluster, aren't they? It'll be another thing we can, you know, sort of bludgeon them with, saying, you know, clearly you're not the party. As useless as you are, you're clearly not even the party that can provide, you know, some kind of stability. And you can't even do managed decline very well. You just let a crisis occur. So... they're just useless, really, aren't they?
Well, before Jason jumps in, I want to add this, Wesley, and see what you think about this. I think there could have been two ways the Conservatives could have played this. On one hand, they could have locked things down to reduce death and had a very, very low death rate. On the other hand, they could have kept the economy open, given people freedoms, and there been a slightly higher death rate, but there not been the economic crisis and the loss of liberty. And I think both of those could have worked on their own merit. But I think having the economic slump, having the lockdown, the loss of liberties, as well as the death toll, will be the overwhelming sort of nail in the Conservatives, or could be the nail in the Conservatives' coffins. What's your take on that, Wesley?
I mean, it's just been a disaster. And I think if they don't move to a position where they say, look, clearly, because I think it's been being shown now that it is mostly older people that are, you know, dying at very much the higher rate, you know, if they don't start opening up the economy, yeah, it's just like they got the worst of both worlds. They ruined the economy and they let loads of people die. So it's a double whammy of incompetence, isn't it? So people are going to be angry that people have died, and they're going to be angry that they lost their liberties, which is not something that's supposed to happen under Conservative watch, but that's what's taken place. I think actually during their reign, there's going to be a hell of a lot more that we can bludgeon them with come next election. But for us, it's very sad coronavirus has happened, but it has just gone to show, look, these people, they're not just useless, both socially, in the social realm, but they're completely lackluster in governance too.
Do you have any takes on this, Jason?
I want to quickly say we are just over 300 subs. I think it, wait, let's see if this is right. How many subs is it? Oh, just over 200 subs to get Wesley up to the next rung. So I've just dropped his channel link into the chat. Everybody jump over there. Surely 200 more folks can jump over and click sub, and we'll get him over the next hurdle. But ready to go on to the next question.
And he definitely deserves those subscribers. He's been really good tonight, and I do feel really embarrassed. I don't know why I keep calling you the wrong name. This is like the most This is the most unprofessional show that I've ever done. This is awful. I hope you can actually forgive me for this. I feel terrible. Right. Alex May gave $10 and he said, question for No White Guilt. Do you think Joe Biden has any chance of winning the U.S. presidency?
No, no chance in hell. And I also said that the Democrats were going to be stuck with him. I want everybody to just pause and think about all of these other content producers that spend their entire days, day after day, waxing illiterately and ignorantly on politics and going back and forth. It's going to be this, it's going to be that, it's going to be the other. And I said the Democrats were trapped because the anti-whites want the long view. They want the long picture, which means they need to be able to write the history books that say that Trump's impeachment was legitimate so that they can teach that to future generations. That means they have to stick with Biden. And I speculated back then that potentially Trump had encouraged that process so that he would have to be their candidate. And now look at this doddering imbecile. There's no way in all hell he could win the election. So Trump's going to crush him.
Well, that is a good take. One thing that somebody suggested to me is that Biden was used to get rid of Bernie, but he might be replaced at the last moment. I'm not sure about that. I'm not close enough to know whether that's the case, but let's see. Patriotic Groypers gave £5. Thank you very much. Wesley is a class act. His latest Groyp on Ian Lee was brilliant. Live Groyping 11 p.m. tomorrow on Patriotic Talk D Live. Thanks for all you do, Mark and Jason. Groypers Rising. Thank you very much. Yehuda Finkelstein gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, Mark, what is your favorite dog breed? Oh, gosh. Is this going to be like Bookgate? I'm going to say like a dog, aren't I, that's linked with somebody. Yeah. Everyone in the chat is like, do not say German Shepherd. Yeah. Do not say. No, I'm going to say Husky. I'm going to say, is Husky okay? Can I say Husky? Can I say Husky?
Yes, I think Husky's fine.
Have we lost any members? Have we lost any supporters? are there going to be people outside my house with flaming torches and pitchforks?
They're going to dig up some far-right historical figure which they can link link it to, Mark. That's what they'll do. They'll find a way. I'm sure.
I absolutely did not say German Shepherd. The chat is going crazy now. I did not say German Shepherd. It's absolutely Husky. But if I was going to have a dog, any dog, it would be one of those Husky wolf breeds, a wolf dog, because they just look absolutely beastly. It would really scare anyone who tried to break into your house. And I think you'd get a good few looks when you were walking them as well. Plus, they're pretty fit dogs, those are. So you could go running with them and then actually keep up with them. But I have never owned a dog. And the reason being is I think they take a lot of work and they take an awful lot of investment. And if there's one thing I absolutely hate, it's people who get dogs and then don't exercise them properly or don't take them out or don't have enough time for them. I believe that if you're taking on a dog, it's almost like having a child. You have to be ready for that investment of time and effort and energy into the animal. And I don't think I could do that, unfortunately, because of the schedule I work to. So that's one of the reasons I haven't had a dog, and we don't actually have any pets. We just have little Sophia, and believe me, she's a handful in herself. The modern monarchist gave $5. Thank you very much. It is monarchist as well. It's not monarchist. I don't know if that's a typo or a joke or something, but he says, much love from Northern Idaho. Can somebody explain the Keith Woods controversy? Racist liberals. Also, God bless you all and our allies. Love you, Mark. Well, I don't know the Keith Woods controversy. I think at the moment in this lockdown, people are finding controversies and reasons to bicker with people everywhere. I'm not really up on this controversy. Do either of you know what the Keith Woods controversy is or have any hot takes on it?
I don't spend that much time on Twitter because it's a toxic, toxic website. I have a Twitter account now, which I'll occasionally, you know, post some things. And it's interesting seeing what, you know, people are saying. But otherwise, it's a very, very toxic website. You know, the dregs of society often end up on there. And it's the platform where anti-white hatred, you know, festers the most, I think. So I've never actually had one at all. Most of, you know, what I understand happens on Twitter just comes from word of mouth. So I've heard rumblings about Keith Woods has annoyed some people about his position, the Israel-Palestine conflict. Doesn't really interest me a whole lot, unfortunately. But some people...
You've just made a major error there, Wesley. It doesn't really... You've just said the Israel-Palestine conflict. Prepare for the chat to explode.
Yeah, they're going to go crazy. Well, I'm going to fence it, guys. I'm not going to take a position on this one. I'm just going to fence it. At the end of the day, I just care about Britain.
Everyone was very, very sympathetic with me calling you Harry by mistake. But if you fence it this issue, I'm afraid people are going to troll you with the name Harry till the end of time for being a fence sitter. Here it goes. The chat's on fire. No fence sitting.
I don't have much more to add. Look, all I'll say is the reason why I avoid that is because I'm focused on my people. It's as simple as that. That's what I really care about at the end of the day. That's why I'm here saying the things I care about. But I obviously, you know, for humanitarian reasons, some people are, you know, invested in what is going on in other parts of the world. I just focus on Great Britain and the British people, really.
Well, I do have sympathies with the plight of the Palestinian people, and I have sympathies with the plight of the Palestinian people because they are an indigenous people who have had their land taken and taken via force in order to create an ethno-state for a group of people that don't want us to have an ethno-state. So I think there's many levels to this particular issue.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that gets me, and I've got to be very honest about this because I find it absolutely disgusting, but one thing that really gets to me is you see these children. They are just children, and they're protesting in the way that children might. They're throwing stones at tanks or heavy armor. And then you see members of the IDF returning fire. And I find that absolutely sickening. I don't know what kind of human being could open fire with a automatic weapon on a child and do so, just do so as if it was nothing. I find this sickening. But one thing I will say is, if any other nation the world over was committing human rights violations in the same way that Israel does, they would be on the receiving end of a huge UN intervention.
But when it comes to talking about these kinds of things, yeah, you do notice a hell of a lot of hypocrisy in a seems like an unlimited list of ways, doesn't it? So I'll definitely agree with you on that point. There are many criticisms of many things, but I'll leave it there.
And we have one last super chat, and it's from Timmy Bobinson. It's for £5, and it is simply Wesley. So
nice.
We will move on to the question to the questions now. Barclay Walsh. Oh, we've got one more super chat. Damien gave £10. Thank you very much. And he said, just a donation. Got round to registering on the PA website. Great look. Great content so far. Thank you very much, Damien. Thank you for the super chat. Barclay Walsh asked a question. He said, before the question, a report, Emily Jones's murderer has been named Eltiona Scarna. But aside from that, what does the panel think about Piers Corbyn? I've met him and he seems pretty sound. Well, I'll start off by saying that Piers Corbyn actually got into some trouble for actually retweeting me. So he seems quite based as well. And I quite like him. I've seen Piers Corbyn on Russia Today and he seems a little bit wacky. He seems like a bit of a mad scientist, but he does talk a lot of sense. And I saw him on Russia Today basically totally smashing the man-made climate change narrative to pieces. So I do think he's a pretty cool guy. And he did attend a resist the lockdown protest. And I believe he got arrested. So he seems like a pretty base guy. And as I say, he retweeted me. So I can't really knock him very much. What are your thoughts, guys?
What did he retweet you? What were you saying in the tweet? Was it based? Was it a based tweet or?
Was my tweet based? Is that just, yes, I tweet things sometimes that are like milquetoast nonsense?
Well, you might just be giving out some information that's neither based.
I'd just be giving, you know, just who wants to come round for a barbecue on Saturday night?
Yeah, something like that.
Nice guy, you know. Well, before give your opinion on Piers, and I'll see if I can find the actual tweet.
Okay. Yeah, he's Mr. Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn's inconvenient. Was it little brother? I think it's rather amusing, isn't it? I don't know much about his politics. I think he's probably just a normal guy. I don't think he's like a right winger or a left winger, but yeah, I do absolutely appreciate his anti-establishment positions on things such as the lockdown and the climate change. So he at least knows. Knows his stuff on those particular topics. So we're in agreement with him there. And he's a thorn in Mr. Corbyn's, Jeremy Corbyn's side, isn't he, really? Because those are the kind of things that Mr. Corbyn's Labour Party, that is sort of side themselves with, don't they? This whole climate hysteria and, due to their sort of controlling nature, due to their sort of ideology, the left wing, they love the lockdown, don't they? Because they're just pathologically thinking about care and harm. You know, they don't think about much else. They don't, not very very rational sort of methodological people. They're just I've heard people unironically say, "To hell with the economy. We have to save everyone." It's like, you do know if you destroy the economy, like loads of people's lives are going to be, and livelihoods are going to be destroyed. But that's kind of just the way they think. But Piers Corbyn, he seems like an all right guy. Did you find the tweet?
He's an awesome guy. This was my tweet. Theresa May is an utter disgrace. She is an Islamic appeaser, multiculturalist, and pawn of the internationalist bankers. No wonder she's angry with Donald Trump for retweeting the truth. And that's the one he retweeted. So,
all right. Well,
based.
Well, then, I approve of that. I think, that's a great one to retweet. Good on Piers.
Yeah, that's a good one. Right. So, next question. This is from Adam. What does Wesley think about the trend of Zuma Brit Nats being accused by enemies and normies and sometimes family of being groomed? Is this accusation unique to the Zoomers?
Wherever politics is at any current moment, if you take a sort of radical position, yeah, people, you know, can get away with like, oh yeah, they were groomed. But it's like, if we were living in ordinary times, like this is how inverted things are. Should we not be saying that all of these hundreds of young university students are being groomed into Marxism or far left ideology, anti-white ideology? I think you have to be pretty darn groomed to literally advocate and be against your own group, you know, to be against, you know, like you're born white. If you're a white person, you're born that way. Like, people are indoctrinated or groomed, you know, to hate themselves, be ashamed of themselves, have white guilt instilled in them. So unfortunately, they've got this completely upside down. It's the more conservative or nationalist Zoomers who have undone the grooming of the left, which have infiltrated every institution. You know, it takes a long time. It takes a hell of a long time to deprogram yourself from all of the myths and lies that modern society presents you. You know, we were just going on earlier in the show about how the media will always find any way of framing migrants as being of benefit to society, even if we know for a fact that it's not. For example, if they're good for the economy, good for the NHS, whatever it is, they will always spin it as migrants are great. So no, it's not the based young nationalist or conservative Zoomers that are groomed. It's unfortunately many, many hundreds of thousands of young people are groomed by the universities, which Tony Blair did his part to get as many people going to as possible. Why do you think he did that? Why do you think it was his agenda to get loads of people going to publicly funded universities? And I'll leave it there.
That is an excellent point. And somebody's just put in the chat that Piers Corbyn also wants a clean no-deal break from the EU. So he does seem quite base. We've got another super chat. This is from Junta Mominari. He gave $3 and said, don't forget about the priority of the Israeli Defense Force to shoot pregnant Palestinian women and children first. Shoot to cripple on the men. Also, the torturing of Palestinian children in prisons. Well, thank you for that. We've got another question here. This one's from Yisrael Shalom. He said, do you agree that instead of focusing on one strategy, we should be open to more options to save our people? Yes, I think we should be open to multiple strategies. That's why we are pursuing multiple community-based strategies, from homeschooling to elections to meetings to social events to fitness clubs. So quite simply, yes, and we are doing that. So that's answered. Now, this is a really good one. I'm going to throw this straight over to Wesley. Rory Herbert said, Mark, did you hear about the plans for a 1,000-seat mega mosque at Piccadilly Circus?
It's disgraceful that, you know, our architecture built by our ancestors is being handed to, you know, a group of people who we never asked to have here. And you can say, well, that's mean and intolerant and blah, blah. But, you know, it's what's right. It's what's just. It's what's fair. OK, we have never been asked about any of this. We were never asked whether we wanted a whole new religion to, you know, settle in our land. And, you know, and naturally that's going to change our way of life. We weren't asked for this. And so I don't think it's wrong at all for people to be outraged about yet another mosque being built in a British city. You know, people look at London and they're saddened, aren't they? They feel ashamed. You know, it's called the capital city. How can we still call it our capital city if it doesn't reflect the people of the rest of the country? It's a complete and utter joke. And people just say, well, it's just cosmopolitan. Well, why should it be like that? Why do we accept this as normal? We shouldn't accept it as normal. It's not right. And it's just, again, the liberal slippery slope of, oh, well, we'll just let it, you know, let it slide. Don't be intolerant, whatever. Yeah, but it's drip, 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 isn't it? And you get foreign cultures encroach on us that we will never adopt. We don't want it here. And we're not bad people for saying that. It is natural to want to preserve your own culture and your own traditions. And I'll leave it there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I was just going to quickly say to Wesley that, you know, it sounds like you are confronted with a lot of folks in your life that say you should feel sympathy. You should feel empathy for these people coming in. And the what we refer to as meme curatives, MCs, to that is, don't ask me to have sympathy or empathy for people who don't have sympathy or empathy for me. They're coming into my country, they're with their biosphere, very different than mine, changing my environment so that it doesn't reflect me. I feel like I'm in a foreign land as a continent. They don't care about that. They don't care about coming into my country and driving down the wages with their presence and getting jobs. They don't care about coming in and actually taking my job. They don't care about what that does when they're changing the names of my streets, when they're pulling down the statues of my heroes. They don't give a damn about any of that. So don't you dare ask me to have sympathy for people who don't have an ounce of it for me. This is the MC for folks who talk like that. And I tell you what, you take it out on somebody like that, and I want to hear from you how it went, because anti-whites never take that well. They immediately back down.
That is a very, very good tactic indeed. We have time for one last question if we're quick about it. Son of Britain asked, do you think British nationalism ought to emphasize freedom and liberty, given how the public seem to dislike the lockdown itself? Well, this is quite interesting. We talked about this earlier, and I was actually saying that there seems to be quite a large divide in Britain between those who like the lockdown or those who support it, those who support the state line and those who don't. And it's quite interesting to see what or where that divide lies, and the correlation between that divide and people who hold other narratives that the state forces down our throat. I'm not really sure. I think we should emphasize freedom and liberty because it's what we believe in. But whether that will be popular with everyone in Britain is another thing altogether. And I'm not 100% bothered about being popular with all of the people all of the time. I would rather tell all of the truth all of the time. And if that means at some point I am held up as a pariah, so be it. But in the fullness of time, I will be remembered as someone who told the truth, stuck to the truth, and never gave in, despite how difficult it was at times to speak the truth. And I think that is far more important than simply trying to please people with platitudes, half-truths, or even lies. What are your guys' takes on that just before we come to an end?
Absolutely. We do this because we care about the truth. And if our mindset was always, we've got to appease and appeal, to wherever things are at the moment, then you'd get nowhere. We live in the liberal, though perverted by very far left politics too, liberal society. So if you're just conforming to, we'll just be liberal too, you're not going to get anywhere. You've got to tell the truth. Okay. One of the reasons why we take the positions that we do, even if they're not popular, or whatever, seen as, just negative, however the public may see it, we do it because we want to tell the truth. Okay. And, we can no longer just let things, be like, hey, things are fine. We see the writing on the wall. We know if we don't tell the people certain things, what lies ahead. Okay. We know that the politics taking place right now is, civilization destroying, we are decaying. Okay. And we'll just kind of be really lighthearted about it and just appeal to the libs and not speak the truth. No, we have to wake people up and, red pill them, tell them about how the system actually works. We have to tell them what life is going to be like in the future if certain trends continue. Who knows? Maybe we'll get nowhere. I'm confident that we will get somewhere. As I said earlier, this year has been amazing for our morale, particularly for the British nationalist movement. But absolutely have to tell the truth. You're not going to win, because if you just build up your narrative on loads of lies, it will just get knocked down very quickly, and you'll be seen as disingenuous. At least we tell the truth, and we know we tried our best. So I'll say that much.
Well, I think that about brings us to a close, and they are very, very powerful words to bring us to a close on. So, Wesley, it has been a very good night. I hope you've enjoyed being with us. And again, my apologies for getting your name wrong repeatedly. That is a great disgrace. I owe you two pints. And that is 2 pints of regular pints. That's not 2 pints of champagne or 2 pints of vodka or anything. If you want to give yourself a little outro, if you want to tell us where we can find you, and hopefully you can get a few more subs. How's he doing on the sub count, Jason?
We went up at least 100. Let's do a quick refresh. And it looks like we are now at, we went up over 100, but we're still just over 150. So if we could get everybody to go after the show and sub, that'd be great.
Okay, that'd be fantastic. And yes, if you want to give a quick outro, Wesley, go for it.
Thank you for having me on, Mark. It's been a great show. I just want to say this community is absolutely fantastic. We see so many names occurring, but so many new people. You can find my channel, Renew Britannia. I'm live every Sunday at 7. And tune in, because I think people will find it quite entertaining. I got a lot of praise for my last one for getting a few people to laugh. Particularly at a little rant about Diane Abbott. People particularly like that bit. But I've got a Twitter as well, And yeah, that pretty much just sums it up. So thanks for having me on. Hope to come on again. And it's been great chatting to you and Jason.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. So Jason, give yourself a brief outro and plug your excellent forthcoming event again.
Thank you, dear sir. And thank you very much, Wesley, for being with us. And I see big things for you, brother. Stay with us and you'll go far. You'll see things lucidly and you'll go a lot farther than you were with a lot less headache otherwise. So thank you so much for being here. Thank everybody for being here. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are winning in a huge way. I keep learning about folks across the white positive sphere and outside of it who are now using the lexicon of going free. And we now have evidence of Stefan Molyneux using the vocabulary from Going Free. What works continues to win. They're going to come our way, and there's nothing that can stop it. We got people in the government that are watching as well, the United States government. I can tell you that as well. This coming Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, show up. We're going to have a great tap, and we're going to be talking about Prometheus Rising. I hope to see you all there. I just dropped the link in the chat. Thank you so much, Mark. Cheers, brother.
Thank you. So that just leaves me to say, next week on this channel, we will be back and our special guest will be the one, the only Emily Usis. So do not miss that show. It is going to be big. I will also be back here on Friday for my regular video. Now, I'm still debating whether this video is going to go on YouTube or BitChute. So it might be here, it might be on BitChute, but I'll be posting the link to that on my Twitter and Telegram when I've made that decision, because it's about the recent murder that took place in Sweden. So I'm not sure whether there's nothing incendiary about it. I'm just not sure whether YouTube will like me talking about it. So I'm going to have a think about that, but it will be released on Friday. So that just leaves me to say to everybody, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to the wonderful Wesley. Please support his channel, Renew Britannia. Thank you to the excellent Jason, who is always with us. Thank you so much to everybody who donated via Entropy. If you want to donate after the show, you still can. You can now make Entropy donations when streamers are offline. If you want to donate in other ways, you can donate via Bitcoin. Please feel free to do that. Or you can write to me if you need any help yourself at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I think it's been a great show. I think the guest has been superb. I think it's been a very different sort of show from the ones we've had over the last couple of weeks. It's quite nice to have a little bit of a calmer show where it's a bit of a back and forth chit chat. Last week was a little bit of a debate. So I kind of like this more relaxed and laid back atmosphere, which is exactly what we needed on the hottest day of the year. I don't think I could have coped with a blistering debate today, but it's been really good. And that just leaves me to say thank you so much to all of you. Thank you to Wesley. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to our wonderful audience. You are the people who make this community what it is, which just leaves me to say, have a great evening, stay safe, and I will see you same time next week for another episode of Patriotic Weekly Review. I will see you all there.
Thanks, everyone.